This is a Collider.com audio interview.
How's it going out there, guys?
Good.
Not too bad.
Pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
Nicer in here than out there, right?
Yeah,
that's why I thought it was better to do it out here. Right in here.
So tell us a little about your character in this.
I play Jensen. Jensen is he's the computer expert. He's the hacker of the bunch. Kind of the, you know, he cracks the jokes and you know, I guess provides the comic relief in the comic book, and they kind of try to translate that into the script. We'll see.
I have to ask, is it, this is sort of joke around question, but is it in your contract that you'll only do comic book movies right now?
I know, right? Isn't that ridiculous? It really is ridiculous. I know. There's been a string of them. It seems like that's what everyone's making. You know, there's a surplus of them around Hollywood. They make great movies, you know.
Did that weigh into your decision at all? Any sort of hesitancy when you got this and you found out it was based on a graphic novel?
Not really. I mean, it's such a broad category, you know what I mean? Yes, it's a comic book movie, but that's like saying, you know, if you've done one drama, do you not want to do another drama? It's such a different comic book, you know. All the comic book movies I've done have been so radically different. They happen to all be, you know, you can find them all in a comic book store, but I think they're all incredibly, they're from very different families.
With so many different ones, what helps you, or what makes you decide certain ones over others to choose?
It really has nothing to do with the comic book, really. It comes down, it's a movie. I look at it as a movie. Whatever it comes from, whether it comes from a novel, whether it comes from a previously made film, it's about this movie. Who's the director, who's the producer, who's the cast. That's all that matters. If it came from a comic book, so be it. If it came from anything else, it doesn't really matter to me.
This seems like it's almost a throwback. From what I'm gathering on set, it seems like it's almost a throwback to a fun 80s movie.
Absolutely, yeah.
And can you talk about maybe some of your favorite 80s films, and how do you think it compares to some of them?
Sure, well that was kind of, that seemed to be the tone that they're going for, especially with Joel Silver, you know, all the diehards and the Lethal Weapons, and you know, those movies were just, they were great. They had action, but the character charisma, the character chemistry rather, just was fantastic, and it left room for jokes and laughs, and it didn't have to be, it didn't take itself too seriously.
Do you have any favorites from the 80s?
Well, I love Die Hard. Bruce Willis was my hero for a while. I love Die Hard. What else did I like? I mean, my favorite 80s movies probably weren't action films, to be honest. Do you want favorite action movies?
Or whatever you want to talk about.
Well, when was Ferris Bueller's Day Off? That was 80s, wasn't it?
It was.
I was a huge fan of Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Of course, can you talk a little bit about what scene you were doing today?
Sure. This is towards the end of the movie. I don't want to give too much away. We've been captured by the man who set us up, and we think we're about to kick the can. And I don't want to give too much away, but you know, I'll say Zoe comes and saves the day and kind of gets us out of a hot situation.
All the characters have these very unique costumes. What's your look?
If you've seen the comic book, Jensen's pretty crazy. He usually wears very bright colors and, you know, like Hawaiian shirts, and he has the bleach blonde hair and this ridiculous facial hair that I have, and you know, he's definitely a little more wild. I don't think we went as extreme as the comic book is, but you know, this is probably the most tame outfit I have. He's usually in, you know, ridiculous reds and pinks and greens and oranges and things like that. It's, you know, it's fun. It lends itself.
I asked Columbus about this earlier. I know that Jock, who did the comic, did that poster with all you guys when they announced the cast. Do you think he got you pretty well when you saw the version of you with the glasses in there?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I didn't see too much of a difference between that and the comic book, you know what I mean? I think they tried, you know, he has such a specific look in the comic book. I think if you put anyone in the right sideburns, facial hair, and Lennon glasses, you know, he'll look like Jensen.
How much humor do you have in this?
They try to give him a decent amount of jokes. You know, he's the goofy one. He doesn't take things too seriously. He's the one who just kind of loves life, and he's always looking for a joke. So they give him a pretty decent amount.
Now you're the computer hacker. Do you know shit all about computers in real life?
I can barely check my email. I'm so funny doing fake computer acting. You know, there's a couple scenes where I have to, you know. So funny. I know dick about computers, but I really have to, you know, the the props they give me, it's not just a simple laptop. It's really high-tech computer stuff. These, I don't even know what they're called. It's just kind of like handheld screens with these little pencils and touch screens and really advanced shit. I'm just clunking around like I know what I'm doing, but I think I pull it off.
Are there any sort of prep things you had to do with anyone? Someone who came in and showed you, don't do this or do that? So you look
for
like,
computer stuff?
Yeah, for
oh,
all that
no,
stuff,
so no,
just
no.
Look like you know what you're doing?
No. It's so quick. I mean, the most of those scenes are pretty... The stuff we wanted to look like, you know, we know what we're doing was the military stuff. They had someone come in and we did some military training for a few weeks. You know, that's the stuff that's probably a little bit more in-depth in the movie. And if you look like, you know, if you look like a rookie, that won't sell.
Which city are you enjoying more, Toronto or San Juan?
I love Toronto. Nothing against San Juan. I mean, I'm not built for the heat. You know what I mean? I'm from Boston. I like, you know, you and me, buddy.
Yeah, there we go.
You and I are the palest people on the island, man. I've been here for fucking 3 months and I look like this.
You've made it out without the burn, though.
Oh, no, I get the burn.
Oh, okay.
I get the burn. There's a little burn on the nose right now. It's covered up with makeup. Yeah, I'm out there with, like, SPF 90 every day. I'm just not built for the heat. I'm not built for the humidity. I love Toronto. I had a really good time up there. So I'll take the cold over the hot any day.
Well, I definitely want to do a follow-up and say, what was your experience like on Scott Pope?
It was fantastic, man. It was, you know, you always say this, and I want to say it's the most fun I've ever had on a movie, but it's probably just that it was the most recent movie, and it feels like it was the most fun. But if that's an indicator, so be it. It was fantastic. The only problem was that I only worked for, you know, 3 weeks. The movie was 5-6 months, and it was just heartbreaking having to leave. You know, I got to do, I was up there before they started shooting, doing some physical training and stuff like that with the cast. And everyone was just so awesome, just so nice. You know what I mean? Just, it's so nice working with, I know it sounds obvious and basic, but just nice people. And they're incredibly successful. They're phenomenally talented, everyone. Michael Cera and Jason Schwartzman and Kieran and Mary Elizabeth Winstead. They're all just amazing people. And just the kindest, funniest, most wonderful people to work with. And they just wrapped. They just wrapped like, a couple weeks ago.
Well, with Scott Pilgrim, one of the things is I know the guy, Brian Lee O'Malley, who did the books. And
another phenomenally nice man.
Yeah, he's a
phenomenally nice man.
A while ago, he and I had done an interview about all the little references, and you play Lucas Lee, who is, you know, in a way like a kind of flip version of Jason Lee, who was a professional skateboarder.
Right, yeah.
And came to Hollywood. I mean, did you think about that? Do you know Jason at all?
No, I don't know Jason, but someone actually mentioned that. The thing about Jason is, though they do have the similarities of skateboarding and acting, Jason, from the interviews I've seen, seems like a very modest, down-to-earth guy, and he's incredibly funny and incredibly likable. Lucas Lee is kind of the guy you want to smack in the face. You know, he's a horrible actor. Jason Lee is hilarious. Jason Lee is a phenomenal actor. Lucas Lee is, you know, like the Steven Seagal school of acting.
Well, one of the things about how Edgar Wright makes movies is that he does these quick cuts, and there's all these little bits. I mean, did you have to do a lot of that, like turn on the skateboard 30 times and get all that kind of, I mean, those kind of film things?
Yeah, well, he's there are a lot of quick cuts. It's not necessarily quick cuts. It's that he has the movie edited in his mind already. That he knows exactly what he wants. He knows exactly what he needs. You could do one take, and he can come up and say, "Look, I got what I needed. If you want another one, you can have it. But I'm good." And you just trust him. I've never felt so secure with a director. He gets his days, because, you know, again, there's no fat. He's not working anything out on the day. He's done his homework. He's on set like a machine. And I've never seen producers give a director so much freedom. They really let him do. You know, they have so much confidence that he knows exactly what he wants, and he does. And it's funny, you'll try and the lines will be written in a way that's very informative, and it definitely indicates a certain line reading. And you try and say, well, I'll try something outside, you know, out of the box, and you give a suggestion, and he's like, okay, and he'll let you do it, but then he always says, well, just try it the other way, and he's always right. His direction is always spot on. What he initially wanted is always the right thing. I feel completely safe in his hands, and I have a lot of confidence and faith in that movie. I really think it's going to come out pretty cool.
Do you get much room for improv on this one?
Sometimes. Sometimes. Not as much as I have as I've had on other movies. You know, Joel and Akiva have been very involved in the, Joel Silver and Akiva Goldsman have been very involved in the script process, and we did a lot of rehearsals with them, and I think we got the script to a place that everyone was happy and agreed upon. And I think going off off book a little bit, you know, you just want to say, look, we all agreed on a certain script, let's just stick with that script. And that's fine. You know, that's fine. Sometimes that's the way you make movies, and that's fine. I'm totally okay with that. Akiva and Joel know what they're doing, and I'm with that. And it's okay. You get to exercise a different muscle. Sometimes ad-libbing can almost be a little bit of a crutch, and it can be something that could develop into a bad habit. I'm not saying that it is. Sometimes ad-libbing is the key to magic. But sometimes when you have to treat the words as sacred, it's very healthy.
In preparing for this role in Losers, did you go back to the graphic novel? Was there anything you were able to find there that helped you with your character, or was it simply from the script?
Sure. Well, you know, the they were very similar. A lot of scenes from the script were taken right out of the graphic novel. So the hardest thing was you'd see a scene in the script that was from one of the comic books, and you'd say, okay, well, this is the tone that I should have, and this is the way it's going to be shot, and that's not necessarily the case. You know, you'd think, all right, well, I have a complete idea of what this scene's going to be based on the fact that I've already kind of seen it in comic book form, almost as a storyboard. When you'd grab a set, it would look much different or have a different tone or a different feel. You'd say, okay, I have to stop using the graphic novel as a reference. This is this. Let me get direction from my director, and I'll go from that.
Did you find that to almost be a crush in some ways?
It's a starting point for certain scenes. You just have to ask. You just have to, you know, talk to Silvan. Silvan is, you know, I know the scenes in the movie. Is this like the comic book? And he could say, yeah, it's actually going to be, you know, even the shot, you know, where you do this and the shot's through the hand, and that's what this shot will be. You say, okay, great. Or he could say, you know, no, forget the comic book completely. And you say, okay, you just tell me what you want, and, you know, you're the painter, I'm the paint, you tell me what you want.
Are you obviously with a film like this, which could lead to other, you know, sequels, is it for you as an actor, are you a little nervous when you sign on to something that might be a multi-picture kind of thing? Or are you sort of like they're only going to make it if it's, you know?
Well, that's the problem, you know. You think they'd only make it if it's good. The problem is they only make it if it makes money. And good and making money is not always synonymous. So, you know, that's why you avoid those multi-picture contracts. You know, sometimes you have to do it. You know, movies like Fantastic Four, those massive movies, they say, look, if you don't want to sign a multi-picture contract, we'll find somebody else. Movies like this, you can negotiate. I think most actors would avoid trying to do multi-picture contracts just because, you know, you never want to have your arm twisted in any way. Even if it's a fantastic movie, even if you can't wait to make the sequel, it's just always better in any respect, in any aspect of life, to not be forced to have to do something.
I wanted to do a follow-up because I've always been curious about this. When you sign on for a multi-picture deal, or for like whatever it may be, is it sometimes where they'll say, okay, for say the Losers, like you have to sign on for a three-picture deal, or what I'm curious about is, can they get you to do another project sort of tying it into like the film you're doing, even though it might not be related to that one?
Yeah, like it'll be a studio deal. So, you know, if you had a three-picture deal with, you know, for Fantastic Four, for example, let's say they didn't want to make another Fantastic Four, Fox could say, well, we got you for another movie. We can put you in any movie we want to put you in. And it's more about locking you at a price, you know. For each picture, they say, we'll pay you this for number one, this for number two, this for number three. So Fantastic Four, let's say they didn't want to make a sequel, but for some reason one of the actors became quite famous off of it, Fox now has the advantage to take that actor and put them in another movie at a set price. That actor can't say, well, now that I'm enormously famous, I want $10 million. You can say, well, we got you in at a three-picture deal, and we got you locked in at this much cheaper price, and you got to do it. So no, it doesn't always have to be, you know, if what studio is this, Warner Brothers? if you know, I don't have a three-picture deal, so it doesn't even matter. If they did, though, and Losers went away, they could put me in another movie at a set price.
Is that risky for you as an actor? Do you feel like that's
To get locked into a three-picture deal? Well, yeah, like I said, it's just, you know, it's you lose control. And the problem is, let's say you have a terrible experience on the film. Let's say you don't want to revisit the character. Let's say you don't like the new director they hire. Let's say there's a million elements that could come into play where you just, you know, you're out of the driver's seat. And, you know, it's not a bad thing. It's, you know, it's, you're working. The fact is, especially nowadays, as an actor, you're lucky to even be working. I know so many amazing actors who aren't working. It's just not a lot of work. So I guess it's not the worst problem to have to be forced to go to work. But, you know, if you want to try and maintain creative integrity, it's just you lose that control.
I of course have to ask you, Fox is gone on record now that they're rebooting Daredevil. They're going to reboot, quote unquote, Fantastic Four. Of course, I have to ask you, what are your thoughts on this?
I think it's great. I'm sure it'll be a great movie. I think, you know, they do that with a lot of movies. Sometimes sooner, sometimes later. Batman, you know, Superman, Incredible Hulk. Sometimes it's a 10-year gap. Sometimes it's 5 years. Sometimes it's 20 years. I think there's room to readjust the tone in Fantastic Four, as there was for Batman. You know, Batman took on a very cartoony feel towards the end. Even in the beginning, you know, it was a lighter movie. Even though it was Tim Burton, it was still a lighter film, and the newer Batmans have just been amazing. So I'm all for good filmmaking, and if they can go make a good, dark, edgy Fantastic Four, right on.
So I have to ask, a lot of people, from what I gather from fandom, and myself included, a lot of people enjoy the cast. And that wasn't the issue. A lot
for
of people
the losers or Fantastic
Four? Oh, for Fantastic Four.
Sure, sure.
Like, the casting, everyone was like, oh, that's good times. Mm-hmm. They had an issue with sort of the story or the tone aiming for basically kids. Would you object to going back to doing Fantastic Four? Or are you sort of like, I've done this, and let's have a new team do it?
I guess it would depend. At the end, I mean, I'm never against revisiting... Well, I guess I should say not yet. I'm never against revisiting... genres or character types. You know, if I played a doctor in one movie, I wouldn't be against playing a doctor again if the director was the right director. I think at the end of the day, you gotta work with good directors. You know, I do what I do because I like making good movies. It's fun to act, but I don't... If you just loved acting alone, you could sit in your room and act. You could act in a vacuum. You want to make good products. You want to make good films. I love movies, and good movies come from good directors. And like I said, since there isn't this massive surplus of films out there, if a good director offers you a chance to make a good movie, you take it. Even if, you know, you say, well, I just played a character like that. Who cares? You're a great director. You know, Scott Pilgrim, I've played characters similar to that guy, but it's Edgar Wright. No fucking way I'm going to say no to this guy. I'm doing your movie. If Fantastic Four got rebooted and Christopher Nolan's kind of directed and say, you want to play Johnny Storm again? I'll be in those blue fucking tights.
And of course, I have to ask, you worked with Edgar, do you like Sean or Hot Fuzz more?
I'm going to say, well, that's a tough one. I liked Sean for a while. It was just my first experience with Edgar Wright, and I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. But the more I see Hot Fuzz, the more I think it's a great movie. It's just, they're brilliant movies. They're so well thought out. The guy is just, he's just a wizard when it comes to filmmaking.
That's the thing about, I remember when Hot Fuzz came out, it was like, they announced that he was doing Scott Pilgrim right before it came out, and everybody was like, wait, they're going to do all seven boyfriends in one movie? How are they going to do that? But then you see Hot Fuzz, and see how much shit he crammed into that movie.
There's nothing by accident. There's nothing that, you know, you have to imagine in the post period of filmmaking. A lot of things have to happen spontaneously. A lot of things, you know, don't go as planned. If you have to cut and paste plot points, if you have to, you know, sometimes you gotta edit on the fly and rethink things as they happen. I can't imagine any of that shit happens in Edgar. There's no room for it. There has to be a plan from the beginning, and it is executed perfectly. And whatever ends up, you know, in the theater is exactly what he had planned from day one. This is brilliant.
You obviously hold directors in a very high regard. Would you ever want to try your hand at it?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's. I have a hard time sitting on set keeping my mouth shut half the time. I just want to be in charge. I just want to take control. That's the problem. I read scripts all day, and every single script I read, I'm like, this is great. I see a great movie. I think this is an amazing movie. Agent will always be like, Chris, terrible script. You don't want to do this movie. Are you sure? I think it's great. Yeah, I'm dying to. It's a tricky thing to transition into. I've never, you know, I didn't go to any type of schooling for it. And, you know, it takes a lot to have somebody trust you. So I do love acting, but like I said earlier, I love movies. I love movies at the end of the day. And as soon as if I can climb the ladder enough in the acting world, maybe get someone to be stupid enough to trust me with a little movie in a heartbeat.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you got Peter Berg, who wrote the script for this, you know, and that's a guy who started as an actor and then writing and producing and directing it. He's a great filmmaker now.
Unbelievable. You know? I mean, it's amazing how many good actors are good filmmakers. You know? I mean, there's a lot of actors that you don't even realize direct movies. You're like, damn, that guy directed that movie. It's a fantastic film. He's a great fucking director.
Is there a certain type of role or script that you get more than all others that you're kind of putting aside, you know, when you're looking for something different?
Not really. I don't know. It's so funny. My agent and I always joke about this. It's so funny, the climate or the whatever the opinion is of me within the acting world. My agent said it's so funny how hot and cold it gets. You know, sometimes he'll submit me for a comedy, and I say, well, Chris Evans, does he do comedy? And my agent will say, yeah, of course. But then, you know, submit for a drama. It's like, does he do drama? And it's like, well, yeah, he's done like, you know, five lines. But it's not really. To answer your question in a very roundabout, vague way, not really. It's all across the board, you know. A lot of times I'm going into rooms with people really only knowing me for Fantastic Four, and I don't know if you can call that comedy. It's, I don't know what that is.
Is there a dream role?
Not a dream role. There's dream directors, you know, because again, at the end of the day, the role, you could have the greatest script, you could have the greatest role, you could have greatest cast. It doesn't mean shit if you don't have a good director. I've seen amazing scripts that I was like, this is gonna murder at the Oscars, come out and be a dud. And then I've seen scripts that were very, very average and mediocre come out and be sleeper hits because, you know, it begins and ends with the director.
So I know that it might be a little early, but are you already thinking about like a next project, or is it also affecting you because the Hollywood has slowed down? There's a lot less movies being made.
Yeah, there are. You know, you never want to. I think you're only allowed so many mistakes, and you know, perception goes a long way in this town. It's funny, you know. You could. I don't know that Hollywood always does their homework. I think the public does their homework. I think within Hollywood, if you've booked a classy role, I think it's rare that people actually go out and see those movies. They just hear the name, they hear the director, they think, oh, we got to get that guy. You know, you could be brilliant in Final Destination 7, but you're in Final Destination, you know, no thank you. But you could be fucking amazing, and it doesn't matter. Or you could stink up the joint in a Woody Allen film, and you're going to work. Unfortunately, I've had a few movies that have just not been successful, and you know, perception, like I said, is a currency that you need. So I'm watching my step right now. I'm in no hurry. I think when I first started making, you know, when the ball started rolling, and I actually was in a world where I could make movies continuously, I think you're just in a hurry to make movies. You're just excited that it's even happening. You just want to make movies, but then, you know, you make a few bad ones and you see how they can go awry and how, man, this is just a giant collaboration, and it's not easy to make a good movie. There's a lot of creative people coming together, dealing in a world of intangibles and semantics, and, you know, it's not easy. So now you just want to make good movies, and there's a lot of pieces of the puzzle that have to fit together in order for that to happen. So I'm in no rush. Trying to find the next right one.
To follow up on what you're saying.
Hold on. Okay. We just have last question because there needs to be back and made up in a minute. So last question.
No problem. I was just going to follow up on that. Are there choices that you've made that you maybe in hindsight regret?
I've probably already said too much. You know, I would never want to bash any specific movie that I've made.
No, I'm not asking.
Yeah, of course. You know, it's always a learning process. Every movie you make, you learn a little bit more about how you need to approach each set, how you need to approach your meetings, you know, when you sit down with someone to talk about a project, what questions need to be asked, and you know, the importance of the different people on set. You know, for example, I used to think, well, what does a producer really do? You know, but now you realize, well, a producer does a fuckload. So, you know, it's all a learning process, and I'm still learning. By no means am I some salty vet. I'm still figuring this shit out as I go.
Cool.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Good. Thanks, guys. Okay. No sweat. Yeah, man. Well, yeah.
Awesome.
You're from Boston, so are you enjoying the fact that there's a Dunkin' Donuts in Puerto Rico?
I know, I saw it.
Right across the street.
Yeah.